Hello and welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast from SUT, the Society for Underwater Technology. Each week we're bringing you interviews with our members, friends and guests from across the global underwater technology community. Podcast 37 on the 27th of November 2020. This one's a change to our scheduled episode, which was due to go out yesterday. We made a couple of errors in the edit, so we're working on that and will now release that as next week's episode. So to avoid missing any slots, we've had a perfect publication record since the podcast started at the beginning of lockdown. I'm using an audio transcript of the webinar that Nick Swift, the chair of our Defence Special Interest Group, gave on the 16th of November. It works pretty well as an audio-only presentation. So over to you, Nick, who's going to tell us about the work of SUT's Defence Special Interest Group. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Monday late lunch webinar. Today is the 16th of November, and our guest is Nick Swift, who's chair of SUT's Defence Special Interest Group. And he's going to tell you a little bit about what the role of the group is, but in particular about how the rapid advances we're seeing in underwater technology are going to change the way that the subsea battle space is shaped, how it functions. I think you'll find this one quite interesting.
Great. Thanks for that, Steve. Just introduction to the SUT. As Steve said, I'm now heading up the Defence Special Interest Group. We've been going just over a year. It's been a bit challenging, as Steve alluded to, because of the COVID. We have had some meetings, but it's not, to be honest, it is not quite the same, not having them face-to-face, particularly at some of the conferences and things. But, you know, we are starting to gain momentum. We're looking to increase the membership of the Defence Special Interest Group. So one of the questions, you know, Steve said, the society has been running for since the 60s. So why now for a Defence Special Interest Group? Well, I sort of put some thought into that. I think, you know, what's really changing that makes this relevant? And a lot of it is looking at the changing underwater battle space environment. And one of the key drivers is how commercial technologies is fulfilling military requirements. I mean, I started my career in the defence industry back in the 80s fixing submarine sonars on Swiftsure and Trafalgar-class submarines as an MOD apprentice. And back then, underwater technology and the defence technology on the whole was kind of in its own stream. It was sort of designed specifically for the defence industry. You know, in recent years, we've looked at what the ministry calls the using commercial off-the-shelf technology. Always puts a smile on my face when they then say they want to use military off-the-shelf technology, which to me is somewhat of an oxymoron. But anyway, going back. So, yeah, there's some real drivers there. And I've kind of picked out a couple of examples of this. And this is one of them. It's actually one of my old employer was Sonardyne. And they were doing some seabed monitoring systems. Now, these are predominantly at the moment oil and gas or ocean science. But effectively, what you can do is put a network of sensors on the seabed, which are deployed standalone, and they can record data from sensors and then transmit it either to the surface, or they can hop from one device to the other, transmit it to a kind of wired-in subsea node, or even to the shore, or even to a vessel that's standing off. Quite sophisticated systems. What's driven this is the increase in processing power in a small form factor and also with low power consumption. So these things have been deployed for many years, you know, considerable. I mean, two years plus they've been down in the water. And you can instrument quite a large area. So, as I say, at the moment, used in ocean science and oil and gas, but really you could put any sensor on there. You know, they're effectively a data logger and modem. So you could actually view putting on, a magnetic anomaly detection system, and then you've got a tripwire for a submarine. What's also quite interesting with these is that the data can be harvested using very small autonomous vessels, so things like the wave glider type device. So it can keep the surface element quite covert as well. So real driver in technology there. Another example, this is now... I'll get a video going, let me just turn off the sound. So this is using autonomous and uncrewed systems for underwater survey. So this example actually is a pipeline survey done using a sea kit, and that's the Hugin there, the vessel going in the stern. Now, there's a lot of technologies available in the defence market already doing this sort of thing. So I'm sure you're aware Thales and Atlas have got autonomous uncrewed vessels that can launch and recover autonomous vehicles. But this shows how it's been done in the oil and gas. So this was doing a survey, pipeline survey using the Hugin. They did 10 uncrewed launch and recoveries of that. You can see it's quite a significant sea state there. It's not dead flat calm. Remote operation, the operation center was over 60 nautical miles away from shore. As I said, 10 remote launch and recoveries, 100% success rate. What's quite interesting here actually is that, actually not in this project, but in another project, the Hugin was purposely disabled so that we showed that we could recover the vehicle when it was under power. Now, as I say, there's a direct correlation between this and what's happening in the mine countermeasures area. So there's some more technologies. And then the final one is kind of a combination of how this cheap access to technology is changing the battle space. So on the one hand, you have the recent conflict where the use of drones to take out tanks is actually moving up quite a serious debate whether the main battle tank will exist in a few years' time. So, you know, they're very vulnerable to a different sort of threat, effectively, that's quite hard to stop. Now, there's quite a debate about that. It's not definite yet, but it just shows how the mindsets can be changed by using some of this kind of commercially based or capabilities based on commercially available technologies. And then you've got the other extreme of systems that have been changing a step change in capability in terms of underwater battle space. So you've got things like the Russian nuclear tipped torpedo. In fact, Steve did an excellent webinar a few weeks ago on this. Yeah, that's really changing a threat profile. And in terms of thinking about how it operates and the effects, I mean, if you actually set that out on a mission and then want to stop it, do you have the mechanisms to do that sort of thing? Maybe, maybe not. So it's changing the kind of perception of that battle space. And there's also, you know, the super cavitating torpedoes capable of doing 230 miles an hour. Again, it's going to significantly change the underwater battle space. Let me just move on a slide. There we are. So that's kind of setting the scene. That's the sort of kind of drivers that are changing the underwater battle space. So they say, okay, that's one side of it. So what can a special interest group in the SUT help in that defence environment? And, you know, again, we've put some thought into this. There's a few special interest groups already. This isn't an exhaustive list. There are a few more. But these are ones that have got capabilities relevant to the defence industry. So you have things like looking at environmental forces, marine renewables. So a lot of things about under survey UXO clearance, where when you're doing the cable laying, those sort of areas, site investigation and geotechnics, you know, looking at ocean resources. And there's some really relevant ones in terms of subsea engineering, underwater science, diving and manned submersibles, salvage and decommissioning, and international vehicle and robotics. So there's already quite a centre of expertise in the SUT that is relevant to the defence industry. And then what can we gain working with the SUT? What can the defence industry gain? So you're obviously looking at things like the best practice. I just showed you some, you know, the video of launching and recovering an AUV. That's very relevant to the defence industry. Oil and gas has been doing that for many years. They really understand how these things are going to be operated and, you know, have already learnt a lot of lessons about how to do it and probably, you know, to be honest, more appropriately in a lot of cases, how not to do it. So there's quite a few operational things that we can learn. And then also just generally the new technologies, you know, R&D in all of these areas, really, in all of these industries that can be used in the defence. And actually, to be fair, there's some technologies in the defence that can help with the other industries as well. So there's sort of some of the harder facts. A couple of what I call the softer factors, which are just as important, if not as important. And one of them is encouraging people into the subsea industry, particularly a bit of diversity in the industry and defence, and actually using the power of all the different markets. We can infuse the younger generation that, you know, the subsea industry, looking at subsea technologies, is really quite exciting. I do think there's a bit of a step change here with autonomy. Actually, autonomous systems is really catching the imagination of the kind of next generation coming in, you know. But if we all pull together, we can really amplify that. And then there's the wider education element. Steve touched on it very briefly, but the SUT does quite a few education programs, and quite a few of those are relevant to defence. Although structured at the moment more for oil and gas, but it wouldn't be hard to move them more over into a defence type environment as well. So there's quite a bit of synergy there. You know, and this is one of the reasons we wanted to set up the defence special interest group. So, and yeah, here's a classic example. This was an Innovate UK with Navy X call earlier this year, where they were looking at research and innovation from the Robotics for a Safer World Challenge. And the Royal Navy and PP and other oil and gas industries wanted to actually work together to find out the overlap, the synergies, the different technologies that are being applied in each of the market and how they could be applied to the requirements for the other market. Unfortunately, again, because of COVID, there was supposed to be a 5-day workshop that's been delayed. But it just shows that, you know, there is a realization now that the different industries can help each other in terms of that subsea environment and the technologies they've got. Yeah, and these are the areas they were looking at. Power and communications, sensors, detection, navigation, processing, data fusion, deployment and modularity and operations. You know, so these are all kind of common building blocks for the underwater market. So moving on a bit, so we set up the Defence Special Interest Group a bit over a year ago there. And one of the things, the first process, which took some time, was actually looking at the terms of reference. So what we're looking at is the research, development and application of advanced underwater defence-related system vehicles and sensors. And as importantly, looking at the legal, ethical and policy implications of their deployment and use. So that's really the fundamental reason that we're looking at for the special interest group. A lot of the focus will be on marine autonomous systems, but we really don't want to ignore other systems. You know, particularly we've still got the manned systems, we've still got the submarines. There's a lot of technology on the submarine, and some of this gets to the kind of really secret, top secret stuff, so not that applicable to this sort of forum, but there's still sort of technologies that we can look at and best practices and things. And kind of also even emerging problems, strokes, threats in this environment. I mean, this is quite an interesting one. These are narco subs, which are, you know, really starting to gain some traction in certain parts around the world. They kind of, I did question to put this on because they're more semi-submersibles, but they can go fully submerged. But they're really showing how, as I said, you know, these technologies that were once quite only for the defence use, or a kind of opening up to other ne'er-do-wells, so to speak. You know, and obviously they're quite a threat in some ways. And, you know, although they're easier to detect than a submarine because they're a lot noisier, but of course there's a lot more of them and they're actually going to a lot more places. So they do represent, you know, quite a serious challenge for people. And they're growing in numbers and growing a bit in capability. So they could be used for other stuff as well. This is really starting to look at the sort of asymmetric warfare, whereas the threat is not only a major state, but it could be a very minor player. I can imagine if you loaded that full of explosives and parked it somewhere, vulnerable, then it could cause a lot of damage as well, not just in the drug smuggling stuff. So we're still interested in the manned side, and also, and actually this is one area I think there is scope for quite a lot more work, is the use of, I was going to say autonomous, but really sensors that are left standalone because of the communications that you can get now and the intelligence, artificial intelligence, sort of machine learning that you can put in these things to make them intelligent. So there's, you know, these can play quite an important role in the future defence space. So some of the objectives, key one is the monitoring all underwater technology developments of interest and application to the defence sector. I think that's sort of self-explanatory. But we've got, through the SUT, we have access to a lot of technologies that are used in all different industries. And so we get this really good view of what's going on and what's new and novel and what's coming up in that underwater technology space. A forum for discussion of the modus operandi and the associated ethics of these new technologies. I mean, there's real sort of thought process with the use of artificial intelligence. And as soon as you start thinking about putting artificial intelligence into the kill chain, you know, what are the implications there from an ethical and a practical point of view? I mean, it's very different to sort of the above water space, whether it's on land, sea, or in the air, because you haven't got the comms bandwidth. It's nowhere near as easy to communicate with something underwater. Even in a harsh above water environment, you can normally get comms through, and that's not necessarily true in the underwater environment. And so, you know, following on from that is looking at the legal and policy implications of that, and to develop a framework for those laws. On the technology side, we're looking at doing technology foresight reports for the stakeholders, and then reporting these back in annual seminars or showcases, and by writing publications, presentations at the conferences and exhibitions. So what we're thinking here actually is to look at working with some of the exhibitions and conferences that already exist and doing papers at those, but also having some sort of SUT focused meetings as well. And really, you know, the summary is we want to become known as the forum of excellence for innovative underwater defence technologies. That's the reason we want to go ahead. But some of the areas of interest that we're looking at is the legal aspects of underwater systems in the defence context, you know, looking at the Hague Conventions and those sort of things, and particularly on these weaponized systems. You know, very different. If you've got loitering munitions that you have in the air domain at the moment, it's very different in the underwater domain because of the communications and the and things getting lost a lot more easily once they go underwater. Looking at doing some technology road mapping and gap analysis. This is more looking at kind of concept and assessment phase programs, looking at what they're doing, sort of mapping them out. That Innovate UK program I talked about earlier was, you know, an example of the sort of initiative that's going on within the defence community that the wider audience can get involved with. And particular importance in that area is the areas that are not being addressed. Role of artificial intelligence in underwater space. As I said, we talked about that and what are the implications of putting artificial intelligence in those in that kill chain? Quite important. Another one I think of real interest is swarm technologies. A lot of talk at the moment of drones, swarm drones, but again, much easier to manage in terms of the communications. I've seen loads of pictures. I'm sure you all have loads of pictures of lovely swarms of AUVs, autonomous underwater vehicles, but they all tend to miss the point that it's quite hard to communicate from one to the other. So if one drops out, one has a problem, or even one does its job and identifies an area of interest, how do you then get the others to react? I think, to me, there's a lot of difference between putting a lot of vehicles in the water and a swarm. The whole point of a swarm is they interact with each other. It's not just a large number of vehicles, whether that's air or underwater. And I certainly think in the underwater domain, we haven't got that swarm technology yet. And then looking at a kind of catalogue of current systems around, I think particularly we were thinking of the extra large UVs because that's quite a new upcoming concept that we'd be quite interested in looking at. But we are at the moment doing a report on the legal aspects of underwater systems in the defence context. And I must thank Rowley for doing this. I don't know if he's on the call, but he's been a really great help pulling this together. We're putting up a members area on the SUT website, a repository for information. We're going to get that up and running pretty soon. I'll talk a bit more about that in a second. And obviously doing a paper at a conference or our own event. We kind of hope to have done something by that by now, but I mean, as I'm sure you're all aware, these events aren't going ahead. I just found out the Subsea UK in Aberdeen's been delayed again till next summer. So I think it may be some time before we're doing those. So just going back to the portal, you know, again, Rowley has done a great job in pulling together some papers, you know, and there's quite a wide range. These are all, you know, available if you do enough digging around and searching, but the power of having a single sort of repository where you can go and get this information really quickly, it is going to be of real value. You know, just some of the things you've got, like a review of the protecting undersea cables from Russian spy submarines. We've got some papers from China, NOAA and manned systems strategy, presidential documents from the US, doctrine from the US. And again, thanks for Rodney Rogers for pulling together a calendar of events in the domain. So that's an Excel spreadsheet at the moment. You can see, you know, that was a lot of work and really valuable to see what the events there are in this domain around the world. So that will be live quite soon. We'll get all that information. And again, any comments, anything you'd like to see. One thing I'd be quite interested in is how people want to see it catalogued, because, you know, we'll just dump everything in there initially, but then whether we want to have sort of different, you know, a different sort of structure that you can find things easier, be quite interesting. I've talked about the events, proposing events. This is all early days, but these are some of the ones we thought we could, you know, maybe one of these present at. So we've got underwater defense technology. Again, didn't happen. That was one of our targets, underwater defense systems. MAX actually was last week. I mean, actually, I did a keynote there, but that was a virtual event. And then actually there was the excellent NATO event, which was last December, which obviously isn't going to happen again this year. That's just an initial thought. Again, if anyone's got any comments or anywhere they think we should be, you know, just please let me know, and we'll have a think about that. So as a forum of excellence or think tank, what are the gaps that we can address? So anything, please feedback to me. That'd be great. And that's it, really.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Nick. That was really good.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe to, rate and review our podcast. You can find out more about SUT at sut.org. or get in touch with us via info@sut.org, especially if you'd like to be featured in a future podcast. Our AGM takes place on Monday the 14th of December at 1400 hours UK time. Details of how to attend are in this week's members newsletter or in the podcast notes. We look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you, Emily, and thank you, Emily, as well, for creating the podcast artwork and composing and performing the podcast theme music. We'll be back again next week. Thanks very much for listening to us. Bye for now.